people, their lives are changing. We're flying high, creating a complaint-free world. No more, no more complaining. People, their lives are changing. We're flying high, creating a complaint-free world. No more.
Several weeks ago, we did a seven-part series on abusive relationships and the causes of abuse and just a lot of things about it. If you want to go back and take a look at it. And it was all based on a book by a woman named Beverly Engle. Excellent book. And it's called How to Survive an Emotionally Abusive Relationship. And after I did this series, our guest today reached out to me and asked if she might talk with us as well today, because she actually, the foreword for her book was written by Beverly Engle, and her name is Denise Bozart, and she's going to tell me in a moment whether I'm pronouncing her name correctly or not. I like the title of her book. And it's a difficult subject to talk about for a lot of people. And yet I think it is, because it is difficult, it is one of the subjects that we need to talk about. We need to acknowledge, because until we acknowledge something, we can't address it. And so the title of her book is not Surviving Sexual Abuse. It's Thriving After Sexual Abuse, you know. I don't want to be a survivor. I talk to a lot of people and they say, oh, I'm a survivor of such and such. And I'm like, I don't care what it was, because I was abused as a child. I don't want to survive that. I want to thrive. And I know you do too. So everybody, give a very happy, healthy jumpstart. Welcome to our guest, Denise Bozart. Let's see if I can set this. Here we go. There you are.
Hello. Hi, Will.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me on your show. I love watching you and all the wonderful things you share with your community. So it's a real pleasure to join you today.
Oh, it's an honor. I have the world's greatest job. I was listening to podcasts last night while playing tennis and thinking, well, this is going to be a future jumpstart. So my job is to sit around and listen and read books and talk to interesting people like you and help other people as well. So thank you. Thank you so much. And where do we find you right now? Where are you?
I'm in Houston, Texas. So we're just getting the sun up in my neck of the world.
Okay, wonderful. Well, let's begin at the beginning. How did you come to write this book? What was your impetus for writing the book?
So I was sexually abused by my grandfather when I was in elementary school. It started when I was very young, and it ended when he died when I was a freshman in high school. So I, throughout the years after that, was exploring different ways to heal myself and to move, as you said, from a survivor to a thriver. And part of my journey, I started writing poetry to express all those emotions around the abuse and the healing. And my husband encouraged me to publish that, to share that out, because he thought it could help other people. And I just wasn't ready to do that at the time. And as a person who has gone through trauma, a lot of my memories are not accessible to me, and I can't put the abuse in a timeline with the rest of my life. So I'm like, I don't have enough to write a memoir. And so I just kind of kept working on my healing journey until just a few years ago, it came out about Dr. Larry Nassar and how many gymnasts he had abused. And it just cracked me open. It broke my heart. And I thought, I may not be able to write a memoir, but what I can do is write the things I did to heal. And I can put together a book that could help women, men, people of all ages. And it's not a book that says, do this, and in 30 days, you're going to heal. It's not a seven-step program. It's really about the things that I tried. And I guide people through exploring what might work for them. I give some examples. I share how it impacted my life and encourage them to get a journal and answer some questions that I offer so they can explore ways that they can heal too. So for me, it was about what can I do to transform my experience and help other people be able to either start a healing journey or find other things to do on their healing journey so that they can really move from survivor to thriver.
In your estimation, how prevalent is sexual abuse?
The statistics are scary. You know, we see numbers like 1 in 3 women, 1 in 6 men, and that's just of the cases that are reported. And given the situation with COVID, there's been a lot of concern about that increasing because of the circumstances of being at home, and also the lack of reporting or recognition of what's happening because people are stuck at home and kids aren't going to school where they may be recognized as having a situation going on. So it's a double whammy. It's people are in this abusive environment and people may not be recognizing what's happening. So I imagine the statistics have gone worse.
Why is it so difficult as a society, in your opinion, for us to talk about this?
I think people are just afraid to think that people who could present in the world as someone generous, kind, you know, we hear about pastors, we hear about the paragons of society, and, you know, it's anybody at any time. Men and women can be abusers. People of all ages can be abusers. And I think people are afraid that it could happen anywhere and any time. And so that's where the general kind of public, the people who have suffered, it's the incredible shame. I mean, you've talked about your experiences. You've talked about Beverly's book. And the shame is overwhelming and the fear of rejection if you share your story. Because unfortunately, many, many survivors that do share their stories are denied. They're rejected. People say it's not true. And so it's all of this energy around fear and shame that keeps us quiet and silenced.
Is it also partly, I know too, that I feel more free to talk about what happened to me now that my father has made his transition. Is it easier, do you feel, when the person has died to address those issues within yourself and also to discuss it with your support system?
I believe each person has their own individual experience and individual journey. But from my perspective, I didn't really understand what was happening as a child. I was too ashamed to tell anyone if it came up, but my brain kind of locked me down and protected me and didn't let me understand what was happening. And I didn't have the memories until he died. And so it was like my brain all of a sudden said, aha, you know, he's dead. You're safe. You can share it. But even then, I wasn't able to share it because I wasn't far enough along in my journey. So for me personally, it was liberating in the sense that that was when I started my healing journey. But I can imagine for some people, it's too overwhelming. They may be still in that situation where they have to go to family gatherings with this person, or that person's still a part of their life. And it's hard to imagine, you know, talking about that and the rejection you could get. So for me personally, yeah, it was. I can't imagine confronting him. He was a lieutenant colonel in the Great War and very intimidating, very intense person, very manipulative. Even so, after all my journey, if I think about trying to have to confront him, it's terrifying to imagine.
Sure.
So anyone that actually does have a confrontation or takes their abuser to court, it's amazing to me the strength to do that.
Mm-hmm. And I want to touch on something real quick that you just alluded to, and that is my older brother, I feel, had far worse abuse than I did. And as adults, I would say, do you remember when we did such and such as a kid? And he would often say, I do not remember my childhood. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of controversy over people saying, oh, this repressed memory comes forward. Repressed memories are a very real thing, and it is a survival mechanism, mm-hmm. often for a child that is in an intolerable situation who basically puts it into a box and nails the box shut.
Absolutely. And that was my experience. Kids are not prepared. I mean, their brains have not developed. Emotionally, they're not developed. And it's been shown over and over again with all the research and on trauma about how that happens exactly, as you said, that's the coping mechanism. You rely on these adults to keep you safe and take care of you. And basically what you do is you blame yourself. And then, you know, you have this response where you're going to just do whatever it takes to. And it's not conscious. It's not, obviously, we're not saying, no. Oh, I have to put this away. Your brain does that automatically for you. You have no control over that. That's just what it does to help you. And my box stayed tightly locked until he died. And then, you know, insanity ensued when that popped open. But it does make me very frustrated and honestly a little angry when people will make these statements. Oh, well, that's just false memory, or that's, you know, repressed memory isn't a true thing. And it's like, I had that experience. It is absolutely true. And when someone tells you that something happened, the best thing you can do is believe them.
When working through some of the exercises in Beverly's book, because specifically I was verbally and emotionally abused, not sexually, and physically abused, I was physically abused. I remember having memories and just, they came out. I remember my mother standing over me, begging my father not to hit us anymore. And didn't remember that before. So, and you're right. I was so afraid to come forward in this community. And yet I think that it's one of the things that's bonded our community. Because when you say 1 in 3 to 1 in 6 people, depending on a man or a woman, have been abused sexually, then you've got to add in physically and emotionally. And then it gets to almost 1 in 2. And it's, to me, it's hard to, the way I think of it is I'm on an elevator and there's 6 people, you know? And that not only means that one of them probably was abused, but also that one of them may be an abuser. That's the thing I struggle with. That's the thing I struggle with, is that there, that it is, if it, not the prevalence of victims, but the prevalence of abusers there must be.
Absolutely.
Well, you talked about how to figure out how to get help for yourself in your book. Would you like to touch on some of that?
Yeah, sure. So I'm a very strong believer that people need to contact and work with the therapist. I think that's a critical process for being able to have a neutral person in your life that can help you work through things as you're going and trying some of these other things in my book as well. But that's critical. That was a critical part of my healing. And I think it's a resource that everyone really needs to look into. And I guide you through how you would find someone. And we're in a really wonderful place with telemedicine and telehealth available. You can actually have a chance to find someone who's trained in working with trauma and abuse survivors. You know, I didn't have that when I was first going through mine, but that's a wonderful opportunity now. And I talk about various things I've done, like with yoga. It was really critical for me to go through that process to really connect with my body. And now we have trauma-informed yoga for people who have survived. I've done meditation, which helped me work on my mind to release that voice of my grandfather and all those negative thoughts and that I developed off of what he was doing to me and telling me. And then, you know, I evolved into this perfectionist. So I had that perfectionist voice. And so meditation helped me be present and really get rid of those two voices and learn to listen to my own authentic voice, to learn to trust myself and my intuition and connect with that again. So those were two critical pieces for me. But it might be that someone is into running or biking or bowling, you know, whatever it is that really helps them learn to be present and express themselves. I got into photography and art because I've always been really creative. And so that would get me out in nature to explore. You know, you talk about going to the beach and how amazing that is. And so that those were all things that I explored. And it, for me, it wasn't a conscious, let me build this plan of what I'm going to do. I was just kind of stumbling along. I didn't have a blueprint, a workbook to go through and someone to guide me. And that was really one of my goals for this book is, can I create a blueprint? Can I create a workbook with questions that people can work through and discover for themselves based on my examples where they could go explore what makes a meaningful healing journey for them. That's the point of the book. And so I can kind of be a mentor on the page for you, but it's really you engaging and starting your healing journey with a little help along the way.
The shame is such a huge part of it, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't, and I'm going to project here and you correct me, but I know that with the type of abuse that I suffered, there's the existential shame. There's a difference between guilt. Guilt and shame. Guilt would be I reach over and whack Teddy on the head. Well, that's an act and I feel bad for having done it and I apologize, give him a treat, whatever. Never do it again. But shame is an existential feeling that there's something wrong with you. And one of the things that people who have suffered abuse, I know this because I know a number of people who have been sexually abused as well as physically, emotionally, et cetera, is that we carry a shame almost as if we were born with a target. Why me? Do you feel that that is something that Or I guess the better question would be, do you experience that yourself? And what would you recommend? If so, what would you recommend for moving through that feeling?
Yeah, I was really overwhelmed with shame. It was sort of like in my DNA. You know, that's what my grandfather taught me. When you're a young child, you're learning about the world and experiencing the world for the first time. And he taught me that the world is not a safe place.
Right.
That people who love you can hurt you. And he taught me I was worthless, that I was unlovable, mm-hmm. that I deserved what was happening to me. And he may not have always used words, but his actions, his intention, I intuitively picked up on that. And so that became literally ingrained in the deepest part of my brain as a foundation of the way the world is and how it treats you. And it was what kept me from telling my family for the longest time. It was what kept me from trying to get help for the longest time. It kept me distant from people in my life. Even if I was dating or had friends, there was always this fear that they would find out about what had happened to me, and the shame. It was just preventing me from having those full relationships. And it was through all these different practices, going to therapy, the yoga, the meditation, slowly learning to be my true authentic self, to be present, to realize that what I was taught was a lie. All those things that I was taught as a child by my grandfather, by what he did and said, those were lies. That I could let go of that. And that's really the imagery that I have on my book, is a ball and chain that's broken mm-hmm. open, the mm-hmm. rose growing through it. And to me, that was literally break your bondage to the past and not let your past constantly drive you. Don't live out of your fear and shame. Let go of that through all of the work that you can do for your healing and focus on your growth. So the red rose to me is love for myself and this beautiful rose, this beautiful scent. But the rose has thorns because we need those good boundaries as well. So it was not an immediate thing that I processed and worked through. I had to have affirmations on stickies on my mirror. I had to read self-help books. I had to go through all these different themes that I've mentioned. And it was slowly over time, I got to the point where I literally had this vision, this ball and chain is keeping me from living my life. I can break it. I can let go of that. And I can believe that I'm really a worthwhile, wonderful person. And I can let go of all that other stuff that I was taught.
The universality of it, again, I always want to bring it back to, because I realize that there are a lot of people who are watching this today who have experienced either what I've experienced or what you've experienced. And then there are people who have not. And what I want those people who have not to understand is you get on an elevator. A good friend of mine put it that people who were abused tend to walk around with a perpetual sunburn. It's like mm-hmm. they're afraid, they're jumpy, and the only way to have gotten that way is to have that shame instilled, because it's the way to control, it's the way to mm-hmm. manipulate. What would you say to a person who was abused sexually and has not come forward and truly addressed it, but has more done that compartmentalization that we talked about?
Yeah, I would tell them that let's start with it's not your fault, that there's nothing to be ashamed of. It's something that someone did to you and it's not your fault. And if that's part of what's keeping you compartmentalizing things, see if you can release that. And I don't expect anyone to join the Me Too movement and tell all their friends and, you know, express it. Your story is your story to tell who you want to tell it to. But at least you need to tell it to yourself. At least you need to start thinking about what had happened. And I'm not telling you go dig into, you know, the dark basement and try to relive everything, but realize your world has been impacted by some of the things that happened to you, but you were strong enough to make it through all of that. So you're going to be strong enough to choose to heal and to choose to find things that are going to help you live a better life. And there's some ache in there. There's some need in there that most survivors have, that they don't want to keep living the life they have and the pain and the living in the past. So there's some drive there. And I say, take that drive and put that energy into healing, that you can do that. You have the strength and you have a glorious, beautiful life that you can live without having to hang on to any of that shame and suffering. So please start even a baby step, whatever that baby step can be for you today. It doesn't have to be big. You don't have to jump on the Autobahn and drive 200 miles an hour trying to get to a destination of healing. You can take one baby step at a time. You know, you can buy books, you can listen to podcasts, whatever's enriching, do those small things and have them build up over time. And hopefully you can start to realize that that compartmentalization will dissolve. You'll start to be able to integrate. You'll start to be able to express your authentic self.
Awesome. I see a number of good comments here. I'd like to see if anyone has any questions. Our guest is Denise Bozart or Bozart?
Bossert, actually.
Bossert. I grew up with a Denise Bozart.
Oh, okay.
In South Carolina, in Columbia, wow. South Carolina. I thought, wow, well, isn't that interesting? So if you've got a question, accidentally hit the wrong button. If you have a question for Denise, now is your chance. We're going to take a few minutes. I'll connect with some of the people who just want to say good morning, grateful for my muscles and all the amazing things I can do. David says, hi. Grateful for Virginia, last night's full moon on our pond. Have been some gorgeous full moons. Grateful for Jumpstart, says Paula. Willow says, good morning. I'm going to skip down. Here we go. Willow says, so true what you are saying, and telling the truth takes courage. Willow has already shared. Be sure and share this, especially send it in a message. If you know someone who has experienced sexual abuse, I highly recommend that you do that. I've got a number of friends on Facebook who that is true for. Mary says that my therapist helps me stay grounded. And let it go, let it go, let it go. Such good thoughts. Mary says acceptance. And I want to touch on something here in just a moment myself, if I remember. Maybe not the right word, but I had to accept that it happened to me. Absolutely. Wouldn't you agree, Denise?
Yeah, that's a starting point. You know, denying is denying yourself in the end.
I remember seeing a therapist for a while, and he's like, Will, you were abused. And I was like, I was spanked. Will, you were yelled at, you were criticized, you were demeaned. I had a strong father. It's amazing. It took me a long time. Acceptance is the perfect word, says Willow. Willow says, what a great guess. Denise Bossert, is that the spelling? Denise, it's Bossarte, if I'm yes. correct. Is that right? All right, yes. What a great guess. She says, Liz says, Denise, do you ever practice manifestation meditation? Liz asks.
I actually do a loving kindness meditation has been the focus of mine, but I don't think it has to be one particular kind of meditation, whatever really you connect with, and it might take a little exploration. It might even be a guided meditation practice that you get a tape and that's what's helpful for you. So mine is following the breath and being present and working with loving kindness, but I think all forms of meditation could be helpful. Yes.
Great. I see one here from David Steele. It's hard to say whether getting your butt pounded for disciplinary reasons can be considered, quote, abuse. By today's standards, that may have been called abuse. Hard to understand it. It was the way it was back in the 1960s and 1970s. Yeah, we also had segregated lunch counters in the 1960s. We don't have that anymore. There's no reason to hit a child, and children should not have been hit then. Willow says, Bossert. Great name. There's an E on the end, though, I think. Liz says, awesome. Thank you. Denise, tell us how people can get your book, please.
Sure. It's on all the major book distributors, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Apple. If you're interested in learning more about me and my book, I have a website, thrivingaftersexualabusebook.com. And on there, I have more information. I have what I call a healing library, which has reference books you can look into, more about me, links to all the places you can purchase my book, and we'll have a link to the show out on my website as well.
Awesome. And one more time, it is Thriving. I'm trying to type while leaning. Thriving
after
sexual
abuse
book.com. Thriving after sexual abuse.com. I probably misspelled it, but I'm sure someone will correct me. Denise, thank you for your courage. Thank you for doing this. Yeah.
I really appreciate you having me on and being able to share this with your group, your wonderful community, and hopefully they'll have learned something that they can share out to those people that they might know that need a little support around their healing process.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. I was thinking, I have a very good friend who was sexually abused by a number of people as a child. And it's like her record is scratched, is how I've always put it. And I so would love to help her. So I may just buy it myself and give it to her. Thanks, everybody. Thank you very much. Love you all. Y'all be sure and come back and see us again tomorrow. And Teddy Bear and I will be here. Look forward to seeing you then. Make it a great day. And listen, as you're going out, remember there's a lot of people around you who have a sunburn. Either you're one of those who was abused physically, sexually, or emotionally as a child, and or were, I think I said sexually. Anyway, just remember, have compassion for people around you. And for those of us who did go through it, remember, life is not the frightening place it was. Our abusers presented it to be. Denise put it really, really, really well. She grew up thinking the world was frightening because that's how an abuser keeps control of you. I can tell you that people who have been abused are frightened. They walk into the world, myself included, and it's amazing how anxious I can get just making a phone call. But now, thank you so much that we've had this opportunity to continue to have this conversation, because in so doing, I've been able to help you and heal myself. I see a little bit of an exchange going on here. Mom and I talked it out, says Willow. Dave says, Mom had to hold Dad back at many times to keep him from being enraged. Yeah, my mom had to hold me back. Thank you, Mr. Bowen. It's good to talk it out. I agree, David. Thank you so much for your comments. Thank you, everybody. And I look forward to seeing you all.
No more, no more complaining people. Their lives are changing. We're flying high, creating a complaint-free world. No more, no more complaining people. Their lives are changing.